in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving higher, time and time again. Through the years, you'll find us here. Moving higher.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast Markets with Sean Hackett. This episode of Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by Dawson Tire and Wheel, the premier ag tire and wheel provider in North America, helping people grow. Well, Sean, how are you doing this morning, bud?
I'm doing great. I'm doing super good.
Good, man. I wasn't overly expecting anything crazy to happen, but I sure wasn't thinking that corn would close down and that beans would be off 13 cents and everything and all this other stuff. So this is truly a case of when the boy has cried wolf too many times, no one's going to believe anything they say until it actually happens. So I guess that's where we're at with the markets right now.
Yeah, we've been talking about this in our reports for quite a few weeks. As you know, we've been warning about buyer's remorse, you know, kind of a cataclysmic, here's the sign, it comes and goes, and there's nothing that happens. And so when nothing happens and people thought something would happen, what do you sell? And I think what really kind of got the soybean market, you know, getting hit in the afternoon is when you look at the timing, because we got a little more information yesterday, mm-hmm. When you look at the timing of purchases, 3/4 of their required purchases are in the second year.
Yeah.
You know, 1/4 in this year. So they really don't have a huge commitment leading up to the election. And it's only after the election that they are committing to doing much larger things. And, of course, you know, that means who knows what they really will do. So the market was kind of disappointed that it's a back-end loaded deal, and it's very uncertain how much they really will buy in the first year, other than they'll certainly make their minimum commitment. But it doesn't look like it'll be too much different from what we've already been seeing.
Yeah. So I'm glad we got the deal signed. I'm glad that stability is put back in the marketplace. We got to get the USMCA deal taken care of. You know, we still have to get it through the Senate, and then they're all of a sudden it's going to go through with flying colors, no problems. Still got to get Canada to sign the deal up there. So, January could be a big month. And historically, you know, as you take a look back and kind of start seeing when 2020, what happens in 2020, this could be the roadmap, kind of that starting point in the map as we start looking down the road of things starting to turn around. Now, let's shift gears and go over and take a look at what's happening in South America. They started off incredibly dry in Brazil. They were worried about pollination. They were worried about even getting stuff planted because of getting moisture into the ground and everything else. And now we're at a point where they've had some pretty decent rains, and they're kind of back in the spot. And the last report to come out of Brazil, the last crop report, was showing that they've actually upped the yields down there on soybeans. So I guess talk about soybeans, and there could be a pretty significant issue brewing with soybeans here in 2020.
Well, soybeans are grown in Mato Grosso. Mm-hmm. First crop corn is grown in central South Brazil. And central South Brazil has not gotten relief. And that in the first crop corn is way down.
Okay.
And if you look at the price of corn in Brazil, it's up 40% in the last 45 days because they oversold and they're having a very poor first crop. You know, they don't export the first crop. They export the second crop, which we're about to plant now. And so some of those... And, of course, the second corn crop they plant in Mato Grosso after they harvest the soybean. You know, it's kind of like you got to get the soybean crop out to move the corn crop in. So weather is still very important for how the soybean market finishes out, and it's also very important for how much corn gets planted in the second corn crop and what the yield potential is. And from what we see, it looks like this period of better weather is going to erode back to a kind of a hot, dry pattern for Mato Grosso. And so we think, even though for now the weather is taking a back seat, we think it's going to come back in February and cause the current correction in grain prices to probably reverse for a little while. That's our thinking right now, is that we probably have a correction into the end of the month on trade deal disappointment, and then we get weather back on board to bring the grain markets back up in February. We think that's probably what's going to happen here. So.
Yeah. The one winner yesterday out of that of the report we saw come from China was wheat, and honestly, wheat did look like it had a better chance of getting some upside kick from this trade deal than what we saw in other areas. So I guess talk about what's going on in the wheat market. I mean, there's a lot of pressure right now out of Ukraine, where the last report that came out of there, they were up almost 7%, I believe, year over year in overall yield of wheat. Russian exports look like they're ticking up. So there's a lot of activity in wheat right now across the world.
Well, the biggest problem with the wheat market is that, you know, Russia's had two subpar crops in a row.
Right.
Their exports are way off, and the export price has taken off, and that means we've been getting a lot of business. And the market is trying, and of course, you know, we had an early start to the winter. We've had a lot of rain here in the U.S., and the winter wheat crop here in the U.S. is just not in a great condition, and the market's worrying that when we get to the spring, if we come out of dormancy in kind of a weakened condition, and we get any kind of adverse weather over the spring, you know, the winter wheat market could really take off against this reduction in Russian exports. And so, for now, however, you know, we're really, really bumped the winter wheat market up against some pretty good resistance. We don't think that we can go too much higher on winter weather and on Russian exports were being reduced. We think we're going to have to wait it out a little bit until we get into March and we get kind of that spring trade going. So we think the wheat market's probably topped itself out for now, but it's had an incredible run. It's been the star of the grain markets over the last 30, 45 days, without a doubt. And prices are reasonable. I mean, a farmer can sell here and he's going to do okay selling wheat at this price level.
Yeah. All right, so another thing that came out of that deal yesterday after listening to the pundits on various ag forums and talk radio and those kind of things, beef had actually poised itself in there quite well to be a fairly decent winner in this, as the African swine fever issue that we see over there, the number of pigs that they're looking at. I did read an article today where China did report a 2% increase in their herd in China, which I don't know how you measure that when they're buying pigs as fast as they can get them. But if they're growing their overall herd by 2% every 30 days, you figure they would kind of let off on some of the buying. But I'm not an economist nor an expert. So, but it looked like beef had a chance to really shine ahead a little bit in this China with this China trade deal. So I guess talk about the beef market and some of the stuff that's happened there.
First of all, anything coming out of China,
we can't
even figure out in the United States what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
How in the world
right.
Can the Chinese have any idea what's going on? So any numbers coming up from them, you know, just throw it up and, you know, take your pick. But having said that, we think the biggest thing for the beef market right now, I mean, sure, you know, we got a good deal with the Japanese buying a lot of our beef.
Right.
It does look like the Chinese are buying beef from us, and they're going to be more regular buyer. But we think the biggest catalyst here is that the Australian three-year drought that we've had has decimated herd populations there. It's caused them to have historic liquidation, and it's kept aggressive Australian supplies coming into the United States because we import a lot of beef from the Australians. It finally looks like the pattern is broken and we're getting rains. It's a whole bunch of reasons for this, but they're getting back into a rainy pattern. And once that happens, and it is happening, then the slaughter stops, completely stops. And then the Australian supplies that have been available in copious supplies completely dry up. And we think that the lack of available Australian supplies, not only coming into the U.S., but going into China and elsewhere, we think it's going to put a big pinch on the global beef trade and offer not only the opportunity for Australian cattle prices to take off, but also put some wind at the back for the U.S. market. So we would look for the Australian cattle price. You can go to their website and they put a price on their cattle every day that you can monitor. When that market starts to really spike higher, I'd be watching for our cattle market to finally break through 130 on the April contract and kind of kick it off to the next level. We're pretty optimistic that's going to happen.
Yeah, there's a lot of things pointing in a pretty good direction for the cattle market right now. Just you see kind of what's happening here in the U.S. You see what's happening in the rest of the world, and there's a lot of arrows pointing up. You start looking at what's going on there right now. I just feel like 2020 just feels like there's so much just bottled energy, you know, and it's just it's shaking the lid, and the lid's about to pop off. And I really feel like we're going to start seeing nothing crazy. It's not going to go, you know, we're not going to triple the price of corn by between now and the end of the year, but we're going to see that steady, slow but sure climb up in the markets. So I'm pretty optimistic.
And USDA always is late in coming to the party and factoring in reduced supplies coming from a late developing, late planted, late harvested, low test weight crop like we had last year. We feel between the March quarterly grain stocks and the June quarterly grain stocks, we're going to see some substantial reductions in supply. And once again, doesn't mean, as you said, it's going to be, you know, rip roaring, but it's going to. And then we have these trade deals. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, it's going to, as you said, keep adding to some momentum here. And if we have a kind of a rough spring weather where we get into kind of a mid-late spring drought after early planting, you know, we could really get ourselves going here in the late spring, early summer. So we're pretty optimistic. We're looking at another pretty exciting opportunity for grain prices to have a pretty good catch a pretty good bid here, you know, based upon this whole scenario of trade deals. And remember with the trade deals, to me, the most optimistic thing about the trade deals is on any breaks, it's going to limit how much we can go down. I mean, I have no doubt the Chinese will buy a lot more on down days or on corrections, and so will the Japanese, and so will the South Koreans. And so I really think that, for the most part, it limits how low we can go because those buyers will come in and take opportunities to buy on breaks. And if we can limit the downside and then catch the upside from a higher low, you know, that means better prices for 2020.
So. Yeah. The other side of what I'm really kind of excited about, too, is I have my, and we're going to do a podcast about this, and kind of about this time last year is when I first met Sean, and he reached out to me and was talking to me about sunspots. I'm like, who's this crazy guy in these sunspots, you know? And then, so I started doing some research on it and the stuff that I actually knew about. And so we're going to do a podcast to kind of update kind of what's going on with that and what that looks like. And you can, whatever your beliefs are with global warming, whatever else, the giant big ladder in the sky, the sun is the biggest indicator of what's going to happen with weather. So anyway, enough of that soapbox there. But anyhow, I do have my concerns about what's happening with the weather because of where we are with these solar minimums and solar cycles and stuff like that. The one thing that I've been really paying attention to, and you and I have talked about this just, I don't know, probably the last five or six times that we've done this, is sugar. And the thing about sugar that people aren't realizing, I think traders realize it. I think the people that are in the sugar industry get it, obviously. But just the run-of-the-mill person out there that's watching it, 60% of the U.S. sugar is grown through sugar beets. And I think about 100% of the sugar beet growing areas didn't grow 100% of their average crop, right? So they had this is the first time in 40 years that the U.S. has to go out to the world market and go buy sugar, okay? So I was like, oh, what's that? That's not a big deal. Well, the world market isn't expecting the U.S. to come in and have to buy almost, it's a big number too, isn't it like 40% of the sugar, something like that, they didn't grow in the U.S., is it something like that?
It's a big number, and we were already, even before sugar beets got crushed with the frost and everything else that took place, we're already projecting a huge, huge global deficit for sugar in 2020 because of India and Thailand having very poor crops due to poor weather. So this just adds, and it's kind of the tipping point. It was we were just making a buy. We were tight, but we could still make it. And then the U.S. just put us over the edge. Until now, we are really. I mean, sugar it spiked this week. If you saw the chart, we hit the 450, 460. It's actually starting to go parabolic. And we talked about how it was a sleepy market. It was kind of working up, but it's starting to accelerate now, Casey. It's starting to actually become more of a vertical market because, you know, at some point, it comes to a head, and sugar's really, I mean, we talked about it in on your program, low 12s, and it's pushing mid-teens now, and it's really starting to accelerate. So you're right. I mean, it's really, all the markets to look at, it's one that's probably in the most trending market right now is the sugar market, and it really has justification. The last time we got into a big deficit globally on sugar, we went to over 20 cents. You may not go there, but I mean, you know, every year is different. But certainly, I don't think 14.5 is the top. Let's put it that way.
And sugar's moved. So when we start talking about this, when we start talking about the sugar beet situation, it was about 10 cents, if I remember right. So it's moved about 4.5 cents over the course of the last 5 weeks, roughly. So it's been. I mean, sugar is one of those things. It's just kind of there. You know, it doesn't really. There's not a lot of things that swing the sugar market, right? Because it's pretty consistent. It's pretty common. It's an isolated U.S. market, and then you have a world market. You know, and that U.S. market's always just kind of set on its own. You know, kind of done its own thing, and it's been perfectly symmetrical. And what it's done in this year just blew the lid off. So I guess the point I'm making here is I have my concerns about spring weather. You know, if we go through another spring like we had where it might be too dry and we don't get the crop up like we're supposed to, or we don't get the stain that we're supposed to get or something like that, and then we start creeping into these 2021 grand solar cycle minimums things that we're going to talk about in another podcast, that frost could come early again, and it could set things up to where we might have a high crop price and no crop. You know what I mean? It's just the crop's not there again in the volume that we're looking for.
The thing is, we may become a regular importer of sugar here in the U.S. We may not have a good crop for many years to come, and we are going to be a buyer of sugar now. Market's going to have to adjust where the U.S. is a buyer.
And that's going to be a different scenario for the, and the grand scheme, the big picture here is that now all of a sudden the price of food's going up. You know what I mean? And you already start talking about a weakening dollar and what you see happening there where, you know, from in basic economics, you know, when you have a weakening dollar, it's great for U.S. exports, right? It's horrible for what you go to the grocery store and buy, you know, so everything gets more expensive. Which leads me to my next point. Let's talk about that U.S. dollar a little bit here. You've been seeing pressure downward on that dollar for the past 3 or 4 weeks for sure. You've been seeing some weakening signals, you know, over the course of half of 2019 moving into where we're at now. So I guess talk about the dollar and what you see happening there.
Yeah, I mean, we follow the broad dollar index, which is a trade-weighted index that the Federal Reserve puts out every week. And we did one of these patterns where we marginally broke the 2002 high on this broad dollar index, and then we reversed back down. We call this pattern a breakout failure reversal pattern. We see it a lot in markets where a market breaks out, it's supposed to go higher, and it fails to do so and reverses back down. We have a clear sell signal on, and usually those kinds of patterns, Casey, are very long-term and very meaningful, and we have clearly triggered that here in December and into January. And so it kind of says to us that, you know, we may be at the very early stages of a long-term bear trend, and as you said, for farmers, at least, it's great news for higher prices. For those that need to put food on the table, you know, there might be some uncomfortable price shocks along the way. But at some point, food prices have been too low for too long, as we've talked about, and there has to be a yin and a yang, and it's time for the farmers to get paid for their efforts, which they haven't gotten paid for quite some time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Sean, there's a million things going on right now and a million different places to go find information, and your information is probably one of the best things out there. So if folks want to find your information or get a hold of you, what's the best way to do that?
Our website is Hackett, Hackett, advisors.com. They can look at sample reports, our Smart Money Indicator works, some of the podcast interviews and market-to-market interviews that we do to see if what we do might be of value to them.
Right on. All right, Sean. Well, take care of yourself. We'll talk again next week. And I am Casey Seymour with Moving Iron Podcast. Check us out on iTunes, Google Play, and about anywhere else you can find a podcast. Check me out on social media at Moving Iron LLC on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And check out the globalagnetwork.com for more information about the great podcasters on that network. So I guess for that, I am Casey Seymour with Sean Hackett. Let's go move some iron, folks. Have a good day. Out.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. your finest year.